Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Musings on Golf. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with Bob Bupka. The great PGA Club professional Bob Ford, who was the first tee starter at the U.S. Open, will be joining us later. And Bob Bupka, we've got Wyndham Clark as the 123rd U.S. Open champion on a Father's Day. It was very much a tale of his late mother, what she meant to him and inspired him, and also him overcoming a lot of inner demons and becoming a terrific player, winning two tournaments in the span of about 6 weeks, including our National Open. What a story.
Absolutely incredible. That's what the U.S. Open is supposed to be about. If you have a dream, you chase it. And he chased it, he believed, and he delivered.
Yeah, and he delivered for lots of reasons. You know, sometimes we all have issues that we deal with, and we maybe give up on some things, and golf's a hard game. And he reached out to a sports psychologist, and she's made a tremendous impact on him. And Bob, I think it showed down the stretch. As you well know, having covered many U.S. Opens, it is so much a matter of either it's survival, it's certainly perseverance, it's just not making that big mistake. Boy, I look at like the chip shot that he hit on 16 in that final round after he pulled his second shot on the par four. Tough, long pitch shot, knocked it up to a foot. He really just wasn't phased at the, you know, going down the stretch. And look at who was chasing him. I mean, Rory McIlroy, you know, I felt bad for Ricky Fowler. He just didn't have it in the final round. But Wyndham Clark, he was the champion. He played the best of everybody.
Yeah, and he went there thinking that he was good. He just won Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
So on a very difficult golf course. So he had to have a lot of confidence. And once he saw that things were going his way, he finished the deal.
I remember reading a story from about Ken Green. This was a long time ago. And when he won his first event. And he was asked like a week later, you know, what's the difference? And he said, I won. And Bob, there is so much to be said for winning at that level. And the event, the Wells Fargo in Charlotte, on a really, really good golf course against an elevated field, that had to give him massive amount of confidence going in to LACC.
Yeah, and you can never bring enough confidence to a U.S. Open, but Wyndham certainly had that.
What did you think of the setup? What did you think of the North Course at LACC?
I thought that the fairways were way too hard, allowing these players that hit it 9 million miles to gain 30, 40, 50 more yards off the tee. I didn't think that was necessary.
And I think, Bob, we're going to hear that from Bob Ford as well, that they may look at some things with the fairways, particularly some of the width of the fairways kind of were questionable. But there was no question that Wyndham Clark is now our 123rd U.S. Open champion. And here's what he had to say after his awesome win.
I feel like I'm one of the best players in the world. And, you know, obviously this is just shows that what I believe is can happen. And, you know, I hit some great shots coming down at the end. And although I made a couple bogeys and it seemed like maybe the rails were coming off, I was inside pretty calm. So I'm really pleased with myself with how I perform.
Well, he should be proud of the way he performed, Kelly. Coming down the stretch of any tournament is not easy. No. Coming down the stretch of an event that changes your life forever. I mean, forever.
It's a game
changer.
He's
going to be known as a former U.S. Open winner. I mean, that is a honor that gets bestowed on so few people. It's amazing.
And another winner under the age of 30 of major champions. There's so many good players. The depth is so great out there, Bob. I sympathize with Rory McIlroy. I know him. I like him. He's as likable as they come. But, Bob, for God's sake, you got to make some putts. He'd make anything over, what, 7 or 8 feet. I don't know. I wonder sometimes. I don't know how much he works on his putting relative to his driving, his long game. You watch him on the tee, he's like a machine. He is just ripping the ball every drive. Everything's coordinated in sync. But on the green, I don't know. And he's a good putter, obviously. He's won major championships. But You've got to be able to. It's the same thing that happened at the Open Championship last year at St. Andrews. He had so many opportunities, and he didn't make anything.
Well, that old saying that people make fun of quite often, but it certainly rings of a lot of truth. In this sport of golf, you drive for show, but you putt for dough.
Yeah, and I know it it was another one that Rory felt like he let get away, and here's what he had to say.
Overall, I felt, you know, when you're in contention going into the final round of the U.S. Open, I played the way I wanted to play. You know, there was just a couple of shots, you know, two or three shots over the course of the round that I'd like to have back. Fine margins at this level and at this tournament especially. And but, you know, I fought to the very end. I obviously never give up, and I'm getting closer. The more I keep putting myself in these positions, sooner or later it's going to happen for me. And just got to regroup and get focused for Hoylake in a few weeks' time.
I'm really inspired by what he said, that he's getting closer. He's not going to give up. I've known Rory McIlroy a long time. First met him when he was 16 at Carnoustie, opening round of the Open Championship. Everybody else had a bogey on their card except Rory McIlroy. I knew then he was destined for stardom, but now this drought in the majors going on 9 years, that starts to weigh heavily on you because as the length of time between winning increases, the older that Rory McIlroy is getting, you know, at some point that could become a factor.
That's relative. He's 34. But again, as I mentioned about all these young players under 30 winning, it just, and the depth of, I mean, this kid, Gordon Sargent, the low amateur at Los Angeles Country Club, he hits it out of sight. There are a whole bunch of Gordon Sargents out there who are going to be marching onto the PGA Tour, and it's going to make it even more challenging, you know, now for Rory. Now, hey, look, he won the Open Championship at Hoylake, so that works to his benefit, Bob. He just has to make some putts and believe in himself and believe he can get it done. I don't know if it's not working with Brad Faxon, who's his latest tutor. I don't know, but he's too good, way too good, tee to green, not to win major championships. It's almost incredible that he hasn't won.
You know, and that brings up another fascinating aspect to people that watch this sport. Rory McIlroy had gone on to win, making a couple of putts. Brad Faxon would be heralded as the greatest putting coach alive. Rory doesn't make those putts.
Yeah.
Now, Brad Faxon's light is not quite as bright.
It's true, and that's just the way it goes. And it is a fine line, as he said. It's very true, and golf is that way at that level in that championship. You know, Wyndham Clark, I know you've always been a huge fan of caddies and their role in the game. Bob Ford references the importance of them. He grew up that way as a caddy, as did I, really, in the game. John Ellis, his caddy, former assistant coach at Oregon, boy, he was a big part of Wyndham's success. For goodness sakes, Bob, Ellis had played in two U.S. Opens. He knew exactly what it was like to be out there in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, he was a heck of a player and certainly a heck of a caddy. Just think how much money he made. He made almost $400,000 this past week, and then he was part of that first win by Wyndham Clark, which was a huge purse. So that meant for the caddy to get a rather nifty sum to put in the bank. John Ellis doing all right, but I watched him out there. I liked how every time Wyndham needed a little boost of confidence, John was right there. You know, the important role of a caddy, you can boil it down to two things. Knowing when the right time to say something, and equally important, knowing the right time to say nothing.
It's really true. And they are their own little psychologists on the golf course for the players at that level. So they're on to this week, to the Travelers Championship outside of Hartford. Bob, as we record this late morning, early afternoon, on Tuesday, there's scheduled to be a players meeting at this elevated tour event. And Tom Watson, yesterday, thought he did a great job. He sent a public letter to Jay Monahan, among other things. He said, as a group of players and stakeholders who represent the face and the brands of the tour, what are our choices? He called on the tour to be more transparent with this situation with the Saudis. I'm surprised, for one, we have not heard a peep out of Tiger Woods, not a word. I do wonder, maybe is he working some back channels on this? I don't know. I do know that Congress is now looking into this. Whatever you want to call this thing with the Saudis, this merger, this takeover, whatever, my sense is it's going to take a long time to get this resolved. And I know there's a lot of players on the PGA Tour who decided not to go with the Saudis, who've got to feel like, what in the world is going on? My commissioner is no longer around. He's got a medical condition. There's just so much up in the air right now, Bob.
There really is. And there's so much to sort out. And ironically enough, I don't think that there is the ultimate right answer. No matter which direction the PGA Tour goes, there are going to be people critical of them going in that direction. And if they go completely the opposite direction, they're going to be people critical of that. So not an envious position of Jay Monahan, and we certainly want to wish him well, a speedy recovery from his medical setback. But it is stormy waters ahead for the PGA Tour.
Yeah, very much. And I have a sense that a lot more questions, hard-hitting questions, are going to be asked. And quite frankly, the PGA Tour needs to give its members some more information at this meeting, 2 weeks after the major announcement of the merger, then came out through that press release and then that meeting that they had in Canada. They owe that to the players, and at least begin some process of defining exactly what this thing is all about, how long it may take, et cetera. But I can tell you this, when it comes to Bob Ford, Bob Bupka, there's never any question. Terrific individual, an unbelievable golf professional, 37 years at Oakmont as the head professional, 21 at Seminole, a great player. And I kind of, you know, he's just one of those guys. He's always tries to put his ego in the background and do what he believes is in the best interest of the game, the members at his club. He's the classic, consummate PGA golf professional.
He really is. And club professionals all around the country could do a lot worse than striving to be a Bob Ford.
There's no question. And you're going to hear from our good friend Bob Ford right after you hear from our friends at Titleist.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. And Bob, we are honored to be joined by one of the greatest PGA club professionals ever, the 1987 PGA Golf Professional of the Year. He was the head professional at two incredible clubs for 37 years at Oakmont Country Club outside of Pittsburgh, and for 21 years at Seminole Golf Club in Juno Beach, Florida. And you certainly heard his voice quite often last week throughout the 123rd U.S. Open at Los Angeles Country Club, as he once again served as the first tee starter. Bob Ford, welcome to Musings on Golf.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly and Bob. Nice to be with you guys.
All right, Bob Ford, I'm going to give you an example of patience personified. All right, we go back to 1973. It's early Thursday morning. I'm in attendance at Oakmont. A club professional, good friend of mine, Tom Joyce, is in the field. I'm with his brother, Bob Joyce. We get out to Oakmont very early on Thursday because he has an early tee time. We catch up with him on the putting green, and he's not able to make a putt. I say, Tom, you should use my putter. And he said, "Where is it?" I said, "It's in the car." He said, "Go get it." Well, he didn't realize that it was almost 2 miles away. So I sprint. I get the putter. I bring it back to him. I said, "Here, try this, Tom." He takes one putt, misses, says, "I don't like it." But my question to you, Bob Ford, can I claim that one of my clubs participated in a U.S. Open?
I you're killing me. I don't know.
Oh, golly, I waited 50 years and I get it. I don't know.
But Mr. Ford, that's the first time you've ever heard a question like that, right?
No, he stumped me. No, I'm stumped.
And you know what's amazing about that weekend? And I know you know about it, but not a lot of other people remember it. On that Saturday, Gene Bourque, the club pro from Long Island, shot a 65. It was the talk of the golf world. Club pro shoot 65 at Oakmont. His fame lasted less than 24 hours because Johnny Miller twirled in that little 63 on Sunday, and nobody ever mentioned Gene Bourque's name again.
No, that's I certainly remember that. I played on the 80 Cup team with Gene Bourque, and what a great player. And Tommy Joyce, all the Joyce boys were such great players.
Yeah, they really were. I'm still very good friends with Bob Joyce now. He's 85, and he's just getting back from a trip, believe it or not, to Maui, because he always wanted to play the plantation course. So his tee time came, and the rain was coming down in buckets. The wind was blowing about 20 miles an hour, but he teed off anyway. And, you know, that's a special. Have you ever been to Maui in the plantation course?
I have. I didn't play it. I caddied. It was my 25th wedding anniversary, and Buddy Marucci was playing as a, you know, a guy from Mercedes, and he's a good buddy of mine. I caddied for him, and my son caddied for, of all people, let me think for a second. Well, he actually caddied for Billy Crassert, but in our group was the great African-American actor, Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was quite a group. We had a great time, and it was fun seeing the golf course after all these years of watching it on TV.
Before Bob Bupka asked you about L.A. Country Club and so forth, if we go back to that 63 that Johnny shot, first of all, what's the lowest round you ever shot at Oakmont? And how do you put into context him shooting 63 on that golf course, Bob, in the final round of the U.S. Open?
Well, to start with, I never got below 65 quite a few times, but that was as low as I could go. His 63, you know, the sprinklers were hit by a storm that night. So the sprinklers ran all night. And the storm ran all night, you know, the thunderstorm. So, yeah. You know, the claim was that it was Soakmont, you know, it was very soft, and that it made it, you know, much easier. Well, you know, there were only three players on Sunday that broke 70. So it couldn't have been that easy. And the round he shot was just extraordinary. You know, he loves to tell the story, and I've heard it 1,000 times, but his average you know, distance from the pin from his second shots was under 15 feet.
Wow.
Average. I mean, that's freakish. He hit it so good. And actually lipped out on 18, would have been 62.
Yeah.
But it's just incredible. And he three putted number 8, long par 3 that had about a 30 footer uphill, and he three putted, which was a pretty flat green. It's not the hole that you would think he would three putt on, but he was he just won the Bob Jones Award on Tuesday night. They presented it to him at the USGA out there in Los Angeles, and he was pretty taken back. It was pretty neat.
Well, you mentioned Los Angeles. You were the starter at the Los Angeles Country Club's North Course, and the way Wyndham Clark held off Rory and others to win his first major. Your impressions of Los Angeles Country Club providing a adequate test as a U.S. Open venue?
Well, guys, I think that L.A. North is how I call it, is a spectacular golf course. I think it held its own. I think, you know, with Ricky and Xander shooting 62s on Thursday, and both finished over par from that day. You know, they were 8 under. Well, they didn't finish 8 under. So, you know, those guys are just so great. And, you know, I think the USGA was kind of feeling the setup out on the first day, and then it got a little tougher every day. And I think it held its own. I think it's a great golf course. I think it's going to be a great future open venue. I think the only mistake that they made was that the fairways were too wide. I don't think that'll happen again, particularly number 18. And other than that, they'll make some changes, not to the golf course, but to the setup. I mean, the first tee setup was unusual where I was. There was no gallery back there. The fans couldn't get back that way to, you know, really see the players. You know, the 18th green, they had a beautiful view of the clubhouse, but there were no grandstands back there. And so it didn't provide the setting that the players are used to. But, you know, other than that, the golf course itself, I thought it was great. It held up very well.
Well, Bob, we appreciate you being with us. So we have a little surprise for you right now, and we'd like to play it. Sit back and enjoy.
This is the 2:30 tee time. Please welcome from Murrieta, California, Ricky Fowler. And from Denver, Colorado, please welcome Wyndham Clark.
Wow, you sounded great, Bob. You sounded great.
That's pretty cute. You know, it's just a wonderful honor to be the starter. You know, it's not a big deal. It doesn't sound like a big deal, but it is to me. And Mike Davis, the former CEO of the USGA, is a great friend of mine. He's a member of Seminole, and we go way back. He was a Pennsylvania junior champion here in Pennsylvania. And he just asked, you know, he said, you know, I'm doing a few things different to try to, you know, bridge the gap between the players and the USGA and their opinion of us. And, you know, everybody from the Seminole Pro member, I think they feel more comfortable with you on the first tee rather than the changing of the guard. They used to just use executive committee members, and they were different every year, and they wanted some continuity there, and asked if I would do it. I said, God, I'd be honored. And he said, well, it's yours as long as you want it. And I got to tell you, it's a week that I look forward to all year. It's great to, you know, kibitz with the players for 2 seconds or 10 seconds and watch, you know, watch their nerves and watch their habits on the first tee. And I enjoy the caddies, you know, getting to meet some of the caddies. And it's just, you know, it's inside the ropes, you know, whether you're a standard bearer or a scorer or a player or a caddy, it's just good to be inside the ropes.
The great Bob Ford joining us here on Musings on Golf. Bob, much like Johnny Miller last week, Bob is the 2017 recipient of the Bob Jones Award, which is the United States Golf Association's highest honor. Hey, you mentioned about caddying, Bob. Is that how you got started in the game?
Yeah, it was. You know, my mom and brother took me out with them when I was, I don't know, 10 or 11, and I beat it around a little bit on a public golf course, and then they joined Aronimink, and I caddied there and met Jay Siegel, and, you know, was just so impressed with how golfers conducted themselves. I graduated high school when I was 17, and my folks moved to Pittsburgh, which was the biggest break of my life. But those years caddying at Aronimink and playing as a junior golfer were just can't tell you how much I matured during those years, and still trying to mature. But they were terrific, and caddies are unbelievably important to me. We've had great programs at Oakmont and Seminole, and I do everything I can because I'm a caddy. You know, I mean, once you're a caddy, you're a caddy. So I really, my hat's off to those guys. They work hard, and they, you know, they really, I mean, as a administrator at those clubs, I mean, caddies can make or break your round. And they're just a really important part of the game.
Well, yeah, I thought it was really cool that the USGA started with this year with John Ellis, who caddied for Wyndham Clark, recognizing the caddy who won, you know, who supports the U.S. Open champion, as well as the grounds crew, the superintendent crew. That's a really nice addition, and I think Bob, the more that we recognize all the contributors, particularly to an event as massive as the U.S. Open, it makes people feel better about the jobs they've done.
Well, it's awful special, the superintendent crowd. They work so hard. And the caddies, that honor, that's really neat. Really a neat part of the Open.
Hey, you mentioned I talked about being a caddy. The caddy program at Seminole, Bob, it's you've got a number of PGA professionals who are caddies there. Wasn't that something where the decision was made to bring in some men and some women from the Northeast to bolster the ranks of the caddies at Seminole and make it even better experience for the members?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I inherited an interesting program, and through the years, Rick Carlson is our caddy master, and together we just cleaned it up and brought in, you know, it's really my farm system for my assistants. You know, first mm-hmm. they've got a caddy, and it gives me a chance to get to know them and see if they will be a good fit. And then they work the range, they work the valet, you know, the bag drop, and we get a good chance to see what they're going to be like for a couple of 2-3 years, and then they get in the shop, and then they get their own job. So that's not our whole caddy ranks. We've got a lot of former mini tour players, current mini tour players, aspiring tour players, and just professional caddies. Most of them were players of some sort, but not all of them. But it's Jimmy Dunn likes to say it's easier for him to get a member in the club than it is to get a caddy in the caddy yard. It's really, really hard, because once they're in, they don't like to leave, and members take such great care of them, and they just become part of the family.
Let me ask you this, Bob Ford. I show up unannounced at Seminole. Would it be better for me to know the caddy master, or would it be better for me to know you?
To get a caddy's job?
No, to play. To play. Forget caddy. I'm going for the big time.
Oh, you got to go through me, brother.
I don't like my chances.
Bumpkin, that didn't sound good, did it?
It sounds like I could show up there, but I don't need to bring my clubs. That's what it sounds like.
Hey, Bob Ford, the name Lou Worsham is one that some may recognize. Won the U.S. Open many moons ago, and Lou also was the head professional at Burning Tree before my dad succeeded him and went on to become the head professional there for 50 years. Who was Lou Worsham, and what did he mean to you in your life? And how have you then mentored upwards of I believe 50 or so of your assistants have become head professionals or directors of golf? The mentoring process is so important for the club professional, isn't it?
Well, it is. And you bring up some great names. Lou was my mentor. He hired me in 73 to work that Open that Bob was referring to, the Johnny Miller one. I was a 19-year-old college student at the time, and I came back to him my senior year of college and said, you know, what you think I can play the tour? And because, I didn't really have anybody in my life other than him that would know it, an answer like that. And he said, why don't you come to Pittsburgh this summer, and I'll find out whether you can play or not. 5 years later, I'm still there. I have not made the tour. I tried 4 tour schools, and he decides to retire, and I was just in the right place at the right time and got that job. But, you know, I was just so in awe of him as a person. Sadly for me, he didn't play anymore by the time I got to Oakmont. He was 55 or so years old and just had really quit playing the game. He was more interested in hunting and fishing and dogs and harness racing and, just having a great life, which he did. And, but he had such a great group of guys that he mentored, like your dad. And your dad was so kind to me, former Bob Jones winner and president of the PGA and 50 years at Burning Tree, which is one of the greatest clubs in the country. He just couldn't have been a sweeter man. And all of Lou's former guys were all just great guys. And It's, you know, when you're at a place like Oakmont or Burning Tree or Seminole and you don't put guys out, shame on you. I mean, it's, you know, their resume goes to the top of the pile just because they're from a, a famous club. So that was the reason for my success. I had little to do with it, but Oakmont and Seminole had a great deal to do with it. But Lou was just, he came to Oakmont from Burning Tree, as you know, and that's how your dad got the job, the way I got the job. And came in 47 in the spring and went off to in June to win the U.S. Open, beat Sam Snead in a playoff in St. Louis, came back to work for 32 years. So just pretty extraordinary. And in that time, in the next, 8 years, he won six more times on the tour and won the World Open with a famous wedge shot he sank at Tam O'Shanter. And, and he never talked about himself. He never talked about any of those wins. I had to dig him out of the dirt, to find out what he won. And just one of the great guys in the world. I miss him every day.
So you opened up another avenue, I guess, for me to play Seminole. Didn't seem like it was going to be enough to know Bob Ford or not enough to know the caddy master. But I guess if I win a U.S. Open, I might be able to play Seminole.
Bob, that day's gone, brother.
I love it.
I love you, but you're not. It ain't happening.
Oh, man.
I love Bob Ford because he's straightforward, Mr. Bupka.
He certainly is. If you had to shoot the round of your life back when you were playing really well, would you choose Oakmont or Shinnecock?
Oh, my God. I think
you didn't think this was going to be easy, did you?
No, that's a hard one. I think Oakmont's harder than Shinnecock.
Wow.
We don't get the breezes and the easy temperatures that they get, but Oakmont's a beast. And if we're dry and fast, they can't play it. Five over one in 07 with Cabrera. And it was the only, in my tenure, I did about five opens so far, and it was the only one that was dry. Otherwise, they've all been, sadly, they get thunderstorms and greens get soft, the poana gets soft, and it takes days for it to get out of there. So, that's like when Johnny did what he did, it's just once they get soft, it's a different ball game.
Joined by the great Bob Ford here on Musings on Golf. Bob, three U.S. Opens you played in, 10 PGA Championships. The 83rd U.S. Open at Oakmont had to be the unique one for you, though, in terms of you running the merchandise tent at during the week of the Open, and you finished 26th that week. How in the world did that happen?
Kelly, that's really a great question. I didn't think much about it when it happened. You just do what you do. Back, in your job, and I was just fortunate. Again, I was just so inspired by Lou and all that he accomplished, and I just felt like that's what the pro at Oakmont does, And early in the week, I got to play practice rounds with Arnold, I think on Tuesday, and then Jack Nicklaus and Weisskopf and Ed Snead on Wednesday. And, by Thursday, I wasn't that nervous. It wasn't that I was confident or cocky about it. I just, I played there a lot, and I was playing with Jim Albus, Bob, another New York boy of yours. And
yeah, good player.
Great player, great guy. And Steve Benson, the three of them, and Bork and I were all on that team in 1980 or 81. And, so I knew those guys that were my pals, and I was comfortable with them, and just got off to a really good start the first couple of days and made the cut, and played pretty nice on the weekend. I missed the Masters by three shots, which was crushing. It was my achievement in golf, really. I mean, to qualify for the Open at your home golf course, it hasn't been done. Well, Bob Ross did it in 1980. But he did make the cut. And before that, and since then, 1959, Claude Harmon did it at Wingfoot. And that's it. So it's great company for me to be in. And you know, it's just, it was a different era and time, and I don't really think it'll happen again, quite frankly.
And it was great company for Michael Block to be in last month at Oak Hill, Bob, to see him tie for 15th and, you know, slam the ball in the hole on the fly and on that hole in one playing with Rory on Sunday. That was really a cool experience to see a club professional do that. Does that help the ranks of the image of the PGA club professional today, seeing a guy like that who can play at that high of a level, who also is the head professional and a good teacher?
Well, it certainly does, Kelly, and we're also proud of Michael, not only how he played, but how he handled himself. I mean, he was, the galleries loved him, and he played to him, and just played extraordinarily. I saw him last week at the Open. He came over to say hello on the tee, and just so proud of him. You know, my good buddy that's passed away, Lonnie Nielsen, I think finished 11th or 13th at Inverness, so it's not, you know, unusual for a club pro to play that well. But, you know, in today's world of social media and television, Michael played it up and just did a great job, made all of us proud and, you know, made a lot of our guys think, you know what, I can do that. If Michael can do it, I can do it. So hopefully we get some more guys to play well.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Ford. Many years head professional at two of the most prestigious golf clubs in the country. What were the keys for you to do your job as well as you did it?
Well, I was just trying not to get fired, Bob, you know, like all of us.
I know that road.
Yeah, you know, I think, it was a passion for me. It wasn't a job. It was what I did for, you know, it just made me happy to be at the club every day. And, both clubs were so generous to me with my playing, and it just was a joy to go to work. And you know, when you love what you do, you usually get pretty good at it. I don't know how good I was, but it was, I gave them all I had, and I think showing up and being there is probably the number one skill that a lot of guys get shortchanged on, a lot of clubs get shortchanged on. I think just being nice to people and being helpful to people, anticipating what they come in looking for, what they want from you, and just making everybody feel good about themselves. I mean, that's really what our job is. Obviously, the X's and O's of running tournaments and merchandising and all that, I'm not going to say it comes easy to you, but you know, those are minor. It's all the skill that you portray and the relationships you develop and you know, the care that you give, you know, that you really care about doing a good job, and you care about people that come to your golf course. They want to have a good time. You want to, you know, make the experience great for them. That's why I said, you know, the caddies are so critical at those clubs, because everybody takes a caddy. Nobody gets, you know, you can take a cart, but you're taking a caddy too. And, you know, the caddy's so critical. So I mean, they were all my buddies, and, you know, just take great care of all the, you know, everybody on the staff is so critical. So, you know, I think a lot of guys miss that. I mean, my staff was my family, and we're together for so many hours, and the rest of the staff at the club, you know, at Seminole, particularly because it was such a small group, you know, we were all family, and Oakmont's a little bigger engine than that. It can't, you know, get quite that close. And I was really the guy at Seminole. We've got a manager here at Oakmont who, you know, takes care of most of the club employees. But caring. Just got to care and got to be there.
I can hear the conversation now. Hopefully it's going to be many years from now. And God says to you, I understand you want to play my golf course. And you say, I really do, God. And he says, well, why should I let you play God's golf course? And you say, because I was the pro at Oakmont and I was the pro at Seminole. And God says, what tee time do you want?
As long as I don't have to play with Bob Butkus, I'll be all right.
Hey, just a couple more minutes with Bob Ford. Hey, Bob. Okay. So
our listeners, viewers of our great game, have seen Oakmont many times hosting U.S. Opens and PGA Championships. But really, Bob, with the exception of the Walker Cup at Seminole, very few people have really, in the grand scheme, have seen it or played it. What makes Seminole Golf Club so special?
Well, it's on the Atlantic Ocean. It's a Donald Ross golf course. It's, a very exclusive club. Hogan used to come down, and I think Hogan really made it famous. It used to be made up predominantly of CEOs that really didn't come a lot, and particularly the guy that ran it for about 20 years there in the 60s and 70s. He liked it that way because he knew they were busy and they weren't going to come very often. So he and his cronies could, play a golf course with nobody on it. And since then, they've brought in some great players and just some great people in the country and, industry people, great players, amateur players. I think we've got about 12 former Walker Cup captains. We probably have 10 or 12 former USGA presidents. And, the golf IQ there is probably the highest that it is in the country at any club. And, they have fun and we play by the rules. Everybody understands it. So there's no nothing funny going on down there with handicaps or anything. The respect that everybody has there for the game and the culture there is extraordinary. And I think, the respect they have for each other and having a dictator. I worked for Timmy Neer for 10 years and Jimmy Dunn for 9 and Barry Van Gerwig for 2 or 3. And, they're the boss and, you don't get along with them, you're in trouble. So it's the only way to run a club. Oakmont, I've worked for about 13 or 15 presidents and they were all great. And Oakmont's probably one of the top country clubs in the world, but, it's not run by one guy and, no better way to run a club than one guy.
You can get a lot done, can't you?
Yeah. And there's no it's no, people aren't jockeying for position. And I want to be on this committee. I want to be on the board. I want to do this. I want to do, there's none of that. Everybody just comes there for the exact reason why they joined, and just to go have a place to have fun and play golf and socialize with your friends. And that's what it's for. It's not for, going up the ladder.
Well, we're going to say goodbye, Bob, and we really appreciate your time. I'm still trying to recover. For 50 years, I thought my club was part of a U.S. Open, only to find out from Bob Ford himself that it was not. But we enjoyed talking with you, and you've had a remarkable career in the most wonderful sport ever devised. And on behalf of all our listeners of Musings on Golf, Bob Ford, you're the best. Thank you for your time.
Bobby, thank you. Great to be with you. And Kelly, long time relationship with you, buddy, and your dad, and all the best. You guys do a lot for the game. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Well, Bob, as I said at the start when I introduced Bob Ford, I always feel like it's an honor when I talk with him because he has done so much in his career and impacted so many lives and meant so much to the game. But Bob is also just very much an understated guy who cares passionately about what he does. What a golf professional.
He's the epitome of being a golf professional, and it surely was an honor to have him on Musings on Golf.
We thank Bob Ford for joining us on Musings on Golf and look forward to talking to you next week. It'll be most interesting to see what comes out of the players meeting at Travelers. Should have a good winner at an elevated event later this week. Thanks for joining us today. Kelly Elbin, on behalf of Bob Bupka, signing off. Musings on Golf.